Well, archaeologist known worldwide for his trademark Indiana Jones hat believes that he has identified the site where Cleopatra is buried. And with a team of 12 archaeologists and 70 excavators, Zahi Hawass, you've heard his name on this program before, the head of Egypt's Supreme Council of Antiquities, has started searching for the entrance to her tomb. And after a breakthrough 2 weeks ago, he says he hopes to find her lover, the Roman general Mark Antony, sharing her last resting place at the site of a temple 28 miles west of Alexandria. Hawass has discovered a 400-foot tunnel beneath the temple containing clues that he says may show that the queen is there. We found tunnels, he said, with statues of Cleopatra and many coins bearing her face, things you wouldn't expect in a typical temple. And he also said they found a bust of Mark Antony, and they believe he may be there, too. Well, Ken Klein, he has studied the Giza pyramids. He also knows Zahi Hawass. We'll just get his take on Zahi's investigation as we talk about the Giza pyramids. His remarkable work, by the way, The Great Pyramid, Message from the Stars, The Great Pyramid, Lost Legend of Enoch. Both of these are next with Ken Klein on Coast to Coast AM. Ken Klein's interest in film production and writing came after stumbling into the writings of ancient prophets. And Ken takes on life's greatest mysteries. He tears off the cover and exposes them through riveting films and books. His new documentary films completes the trilogy and will help us unravel mysteries of the remarkable pyramids, which we'll talk about tonight. Ken Klein, back on Coast to Coast. Kenny, how are you?
Hey, George. Thanks for having me on. I want to thank you and Tom for inviting me back. And I want to tell you, every time I come on the show, we get so many great responses from your terrific audience out there that I want to reciprocate somehow. And so what I did was I created a virtual tour of the interior of the Great Pyramid. So if people go to my website, it's free. I'm going to tell you, if you can't spend $4,000 or $5,000 to go to Egypt, you can go with me on my website on a virtual tour of the interior of the Great Pyramid. It's fantastic. So it's free. It's my way of saying thanks to you and your audience. Oh,
thank you. KenKleinProductions.net, right?
Yeah, or they can find it KenKleinTV.com.
Okay.
And Klein is K-L-E-I-N. So your audience will love it. It's a great experience.
We'll make sure we got those links up, both of them, on the coasttocoastam.com website. You know, I know you weren't part of this investigation and this excavation here of Zahi Hawass, but you do know Zahi Hawass. I want to get your take on what he thinks he has found here.
Well, you know, they have to come up with new ideas to get people to go to Egypt. I mean, because Egypt is run on tourism, and, you know, millions of people go there every year, and it's the most spectacular country on earth, in my view. So, to me, it's just, it's really kind of a non-event as far as I'm concerned, because Cleopatra and Mark, of course, they're romantic figures in history, but really, they didn't really do a whole bunch to affect the world. You know, maybe in their time, it was really important. But now, to me, it's kind of superfluous, and it's just a bunch of noise. The most important thing that we can learn from Egypt is the meaning of the great oracle of the Great Pyramid, because people like Dr. Hawass and others kind of suppress the reality of what it is in archaeological twistings to support the idea that the Great Pyramid is the tomb of the pharaoh Khufu, or he's also called Cheops. But it's really not. And that's what we do in our films, is we kind of tear apart the arguments of people like Dr. Hawass and the traditional view of Egyptology concerning the pyramids and the Great Pyramid itself, and conclusively prove that it could not have been built by a pharaoh, that the Great Pyramid is a oracle or a prophecy in stone that was given to the world that's been lost. And we're trying to restore the true meaning of it and bring to light the importance of it is to every person on the face of this earth.
Why would they hold back information on this? Was it because we may unravel the fact that maybe Egyptians didn't build these pyramids? Why not just come out and say, look, we know these things, and there are a number of different theories. Some of them are incredible, but, you know, they're all possible. Why don't they do that, Ken?
Well, I think over long periods of time, it's kind of like if I wanted to deceive you you living in a room that was painted white to painting it black without you knowing it, I would do it gradually over a long period of time. And that's what's kind of happened to the mysteries of Enoch, is that over long periods of time, they've been lost. And just layer after layer of embellishment to this or that, and the loss of focus on You know, Egypt was actually in the ancient age of the gods of Osiris. It was actually monotheistic. But most people from looking back from our time would say, well, no, man, they were pagans. It was a polytheistic culture. And so over long periods of time, you know, the truth just gets suppressed in embellishments and mythologies and all kinds of things. And pretty soon, you know, people accept the lie. And I'm not sure it's a conspiracy as much as it is the layers of sediments of untruths over time. And so here we are, you know, 5,000 years later, and people like Hawass, they don't have time to go back and revise Egyptian history. It's really long. It's quite a chore. And then they would look foolish if they even, you know, went for it. So we have to go back, and that's why we had to actually sneak into Egypt with spy cameras and sneak around and do what we did, because we knew that if they found out what we were doing, they would throw us in jail or fine us or kick us out of the country and take all of our equipment. And they almost did. Three or four times we were almost nailed. But, you know, the work that we do is really important because it helps us understand a great deal about who we are as human beings. And so it was worth the risk to go into Egypt and do what we did. It took four trips, 3 years. We've got three films. We just finished the last film called Gateway to the Galaxy, and it's my favorite of the three. It's the best one I've ever done, and it is conclusively proves that the Egyptian traditional historical view of the pyramids is totally wrong, and that we have the facts to prove it now without equivocation. You know, we bring them forth and prove it. And this is important because it is a spiritual gateway to the galaxy, and so it's really important. I'm glad I can you know, introduce it tonight on your show for the first time. We've only had it done for a few weeks, but you know, we're ready to go, and we're going to take it all over the world.
Well, we're looking forward to it. What has been your driving force, Ken? What has been pushing you in this direction? Like you just said, 3 years of your life to produce this great pyramid trilogy. Why?
Well, you know, I've always been, from the time I was a little kid, you know, I was brought up in a Jewish family, but it just never scratched the itch for me. And people would tell me, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that. And I went, why? I mean, why can't I do that? Who says, you know, why should you define me? And so I've always been a kind of a person that's lived outside of the box. I left home when I was 17, came to Oregon, and my life has been in kind of a mode where I've been open to you know, things that are not traditional. It's just been the way I've my journey. So about 4 or 5 years ago, I met a guy who claimed that he had an experience with an angel messenger. It blew my mind, you know, and he taught me things and told me things that I couldn't believe. It's amazing. And then I had a friend that I've done a lot of filmmaking with. He's about 90 years old now, Dr. Noah Hutchins, and I was at a time, you know, needing a project to produce. And I said, have you written any, he's written over 100 books. I said, have you written any books that you haven't told me about? He said, yeah, I wrote one on the Great Pyramid. I said, you did? Why didn't you send it to me? I read the book and blown away by the reading, because in the book, now this is a Baptist minister, you know, in 1937 had an experience with three UFOs. And I went, that is really wild. And he wrote about it within the context of the Great Pyramid. And so those two guys, you know, the synthesis of their impact on my life caused me to do some research. And as I studied and studied on this, and I used to think, you know, Egypt was evil and the pyramids were from pagans and all the traditional way that most people think about Egypt, especially in the Western world, and the pyramids was totally wrong. And as I studied and found out some of the facts of the Great Pyramid, I went, there's no way that this could have been built by the Egyptians. This is something way beyond the capacity of people of that day. Something supernatural happened here, and I'm going to get to the bottom of it. And so that got me going.
And how long ago do you think this was done, Ken?
How long ago what was done?
The construction of the pyramid, much later than the Egyptians.
You know, no, listen, I that's a really important part of this third film, because, you know, I have to destroy the contemporary and popular and traditional teaching of Dr. Hawass. And all those that, you know, say, well, it was built by Khufu. Well, you know, they say, well, the pyramid was built in 2400 to 2500 B.C. But there's no way it could have been built then, because I went over there and we discovered a lot of things about the Great Pyramid. For one, there is a When you go to the Khafre Pyramid, which really wasn't built by Khafre, but they call it the Khafre Pyramid, you find this mud flow that, you know, they had to dig down like 30 feet. And you see it in my film. We investigated that, and there are seashells in it, which says that, you know, seawater brought that mud flow, and they had to dig down to dig the pyramid out at one time. So the pyramid that pyramid preceded the Noahic flood, which was about 2500 BC, as most Christian theologians will tell you. And then we found that there was mortar in the joints, and we discovered that the mortar had been radiocarbon dated to about 3000 to 3100 BC. So that kind of fit with the water inundation. And then we when you read about the inventory stela there that I talked about in my first film, we go back and revisit that. Khufu said he didn't build the pyramid. He just did repair work on it and the Sphinx, which means that it was in existence before 2400 BC. So we go back, and then we reverse engineer the Great Pyramid again, and we show how it was sealed. And it could only have been sealed in one way. And the sealing proves that Khufu would have had to die in order to be put into the Great Pyramid before it was finished. Because once it was plugged up, and those plugs had to be dropped before the sealing in the antechamber was closed over, he would have had to been buried before the pyramid was even finished. But that would have been impossible, because the inventory stela tells us that he built the three pyramids to the east, his mother's, Hepatpheres, and his two wives, and they were built clearly after the Great Pyramid was finished. So how could he have been buried at halfway point and then still build the three pyramids to the east? Obviously, he lived far after the pyramid was finished. And so we go back and we take some of these facts and we demonstrate them. We go there and prove that the Great Pyramid was built around at least 3100 BC, which was 500 to 600 years before Khufu or Cheops even lived. So these are the things that we go through. And when you go through the reverse engineering process that we go through, you'll see clearly that it's impossible that he could have been buried in there. I mean, there wouldn't have been room to squeeze his mummy into the king's chamber. It was just impossible. Plus, the sarcophagus that they claim he was buried in couldn't have gone through the passageways. It had to be dropped in from above, which would have violated every funerary practice in Egypt. So we go through all these facts and tear them apart and prove that this pyramid was built before 600 years before Khufu, and it was built, as we say, by Enoch. And we'll get into more of that, I'm sure, as we go along.
Ancient texts talk about the flood. Ancient texts talk about flying machines. Ancient texts kind of allude to some kind of nuclear holocaust on this planet. Are there any ancient texts out there, Ken, that talk about and describe who and what and why built the Great Pyramid?
Well, the Great Pyramid was built. Well, first of all, yes, there's the Book of Thoth, which was called, it's now called the ancient, the Egyptian Book of the Dead.
Okay, but the Tibetans have the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
But actually, that name was given in the 1800s. The actual real name of that book was called the Book of the Eternal Day, and it was changed. See how darkness kind of shreds over things?
Mm-hmm.
But Thoth wrote the Book of the Eternal Day. And that's a lot different than the Egyptian Book of the Dead. And so we always get a negative connotation to anything in Egypt. But Thoth was a very important god that was worshipped in Egypt, and we'll talk more about that in just a minute. But also in the Book of Enoch, it talks about his experiences in extraterrestrial realms where he received knowledge information that he brought back to Earth. And it's he also did calculations on the moon. And so there's a really interesting corollary between Enoch and Thoth, which I want to bring together later in the show. But there are ancient writings that talk about, transportation of humans. And it's fascinating, you know, because this is something that the Western world doesn't even want to consider. They don't want to wrap their mind or even try to wrap their mind. But even in the Bible, we have, for example, in a place in Chronicles, in places in Psalms, it talks about flying ships. 1 Chronicles 28:18 says, David saying to Solomon, you know, I want you to build in the temple, the Jewish temple, which Solomon built, a model or copy of the chariots of the cherubim. Cherubim were guardian angels over the Ophanim lords, which is in the book of Ezekiel that modern theologians don't even come to grips with or understand. I could talk about that. I think it's a great thing to talk about. But they fly in ships. And Enoch, it says of him that he walked with the gods at the time of the gods. the Elohim, which is clearly God in the in the Old Testament, and they took him. Well, how did they take him? They took him in a ship. And then he prophesied in the New Testament that the Lord will come with 10,000 of his saints. Well, all these crazy rapture teachers think that these are the people that were taken off the earth, you know, in Tim LaHaye's, you know, rendering of, you know, what happens. But actually, the word saints just means godly ones or sanctified ones or holy ones. And this idea of Enoch and his prophecy is that he's coming in ships for people at the end of the age. So it's a lot different way to look at it than the Christian theology that you know that the from the four winds, meaning the four races that emanated from Noah. There was Noah's line, there was Shem's line, there is the Japheth line and the Hamitic line. There are four winds of humanity or four rivers of humanity. That these angels are coming in ships, 10,000 of them, to collect the humanity that's prepared for that. That traveling and so the pyramid, you know, is a really important oracle that helps us understand, you know, a lot of things about ourselves, so that we can actually prepare for that, which is pretty far out. I mean, that freaks people out to talk like that. But you know, when you look at like the prophet Daniel, for example, or Moses, man, when they came in contact with Elohim, they fell down like they were dead, like they're freaked out of their minds. Paul went blind when he was confronted. And so, you know, the supernatural antimatter beings, our bodies can't handle being in their presence. We just come apart. And so we have to prepare the inner man for this journey. And that's what my life's all about, is getting people ready to leave, because this life's just a temporary condition. And the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians knew that. Their whole life was preparation for the next life. And why was that? Because they had a supernatural event take place there in the age of the gods that freaked them out, fried their brains, and they were totally caught up with the stars and the afterlife. Their whole life was a preparation for that journey.
They became obsessed with that.
Obsessed. That's all they could think about, you know, and it's fascinating that we have never stopped to think about, well, what caused them to be so fixated on the stars and the afterlife? We don't even think about that. We just think, well, they were into many gods. No, they were monotheists. And then they fell from it. And their mythologies tell a great story if we can pick through them. And that's what we do in this third film. That's why it's so important that people, you know, a lot of your people have bought my first and second film. Some have not bought any of them. But people need to get this. Gateway to the Galaxy is absolutely the most phenomenal film I've ever made.
How controversial is it? You know, there are a lot of people whose toes you're probably going to step on if you knock modern religion.
You know, if they follow the logic, you cannot refute it. If you just follow the logic, the spiritual logic that we go through, we carefully go through in these three films, step by step, and tear apart the traditional viewpoint and prove that it's false facts. We use facts. We're not speculating here. We're using concrete facts. One of the most amazing things about the Great Pyramid is that, you know, the Egyptians used hieroglyphics and wall paintings, all kinds of things, on obelisks and temples, on rocks. Everywhere you look, there's hieroglyphics and paintings about Egyptian life. But you know what? There's not one painting, there's not one hieroglyphic in all of Egypt that depicts pyramid building, the most prolific focal point of ancient Egypt.
Right.
Now, why is that?
You would think that would be splattered all over.
All over the place. You know, it was no small thing building a pyramid. It took the whole country to build the pyramid. I mean, they had to marshal everybody to do the work. Why didn't some guy named Mohammed or somebody say, you know what, I think I'm going to write this down so people know what we're doing here? There's nothing.
Well, and as you know, Ken, the Vatican just a few weeks ago came out and said that belief in ET life does not negate the possibility of God. We'll talk about that too, because your theory could very well be what probably happened on this planet. I'll be back. Indeed, with our special guest tonight, Ken Klein, his latest work, part of the Great Pyramid Trilogy, is The Great Pyramid, Gateway to the Galaxy, and that's what we're going to be talking about. Hey, by the way, for you Streamlink members, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Pacific time, 11 p.m. Eastern time, you get a chance to chat for an hour. This time, our chat guest will be James Gilliland. That's right, up there in the Pacific Northwest. Jim is up there watching UFOs all the time from his area there where he lives and resides. And you get a chance to talk with Jim Gilliland. Streamlink members, it fills up fast. It'll be Wednesday, 8 p.m. Pacific time. So just go to the coasttocoastam.com website. If you're not part of Streamlink, you can sign up that way. Ken, great work. And you know the Vatican coming out saying that, you know, there could be ET life, and if there is, it doesn't conflict with believing in God. I think that was a pretty astounding statement, which backs up some of the things you've been working on.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, in one of the great prophecies in the Old Testament, and modern theologians haven't figured it out yet. I'm going to share it with you right now. The book of Ezekiel, my favorite prophet, because he was so transcendental. He's standing by this river Chebar at a time when all these Jews are in captivity in Babylon. The Chebar was like the river of time, metaphorically. And he's transported back in time or outside of time, and he sees something where these four faces are hovering over with, they have wings, and they're hovering over these two wheels, and there's a wheel within the wheel. And it's a great Ezekiel prophecy of the wheels within the wheels. And people throughout time have tried to say, well, these are UFOs and, you know, unbelievable stabs at it. But the truth of it is that these hovering angels over the wheels are the cherubim angels that are represented on the Ark of the Covenant later to the Jews. So those wings that covered over, if you saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, you get a good idea of the Ark of the Covenant. They did a good job. Those wings are represent time, and they're spanned over this Ark of the Covenant, which is a representation of the guardian angels over Israel, which is basically a metaphor also of the guardianship of these cherubim over all of humanity. They guardian us, and we are, you know, characterized as wheels within wheels, okay? And the wheel in the Hebrew is ophan, so plurality of ophan is ophanim. We are the ophanim, and we have two circuitries. We have an outer circuitry, which is a human mind potential, and we have an inner circuitry, which is a spiritual mind potential. Mm-hmm. It's a wheel within a wheel, mind circuitries. The problem with humans is that we are locked up in our outer mind circuitries of the human mind. And what Christ was all about was transcending the human mind and entering into a spiritual mind. And our spiritual minds are like frozen because we're so, you know, Our outer form, our bodies, dominate how we think. And so the idea that it has to happen, it's really a spiritual journey to activate the inner wheel or the wheel within the wheel. And this is why, you know, the pyramid was built to bring us to understand that there's a life beyond this physical life. This life is just temporary. You know, the only thing I hate in this life is people dying. When I hear that Elvis song, I feel bad that he died young, you know? I mean, he didn't live out his life. He died prematurely. And I look at the obituary almost every day to see if any of my friends have died. And I hate when people die because it's not natural.
I look at it, Kenny, to make sure I'm not in it.
Yeah, well, it's death is an unnatural phenomena because God's eternal and what he makes is eternal. So our physical existence is just temporary. Well, the ancient Egyptians, you know, because of this phenomena that happened with Enoch, I mean, this is hard to understand. I mean, figure out a guy who never died. I mean, he was just, when he was 365 years old, which is a trip, you know, he's taken off the earth. He never died. I mean, that event blew their minds. I mean, can you imagine something like that? What if I landed there at Ventura and Laurel Canyon, and we had lunch at Art's Deli, and I said, by the way, George, you know, a ship's going to land here at the juncture, and I'm getting on, I'll be seeing you. And you know what? You wouldn't be doing your show anymore. You'd be fried mentally. That's what happened to the Egyptians. When this event took place, you know, after he had finished the construction of it as a monument, there was an empty coffer. Why? Because he didn't die. He wasn't supposed to be in there. It was to memorialize this event where somebody, unprecedented, and even to this day it's unprecedented, somebody escaped death. Have you ever met anybody that's escaped death? It's hard to wrap your mind around that. But the Egyptians from that time on, you know, were fixated on the afterlife because they found somebody that escaped this temporary condition where he didn't die.
I got an email today, Ken, from an old high school friend who's putting together my 40th high school reunion back in the Detroit area in Michigan.
Yeah.
And they put in the email, all our great teachers who have died since I graduated from high school. And the list is incredibly long, but as you talk about death, it just reminds me how truly sad that part is. These were great teachers who helped build and massage the direction of my career and who I am today. And they're gone. And it's kind of rough to comprehend that.
Yeah, well, comprehend a guy that never died. I mean, that's almost mythological. And that's the part that we don't get. You know, we don't understand that. But the whole pyramid was built around that king's chamber, which is called the king's chamber, where there's this empty coffer. And it was all built in red granite so it would endure all of time until we wake up to what this whole structure was trying to tell us. And, you know, inside of us, there's this little flickers of that inner circuitry, you know. It's like, and that's why we're so magnetically drawn to the Great Pyramid, even though the propaganda of traditionalism, you know, confuses us and they're telling us it's a tomb. Something inside of us says, you know, that it's so mysterious. The explanation of a tomb, it just doesn't scratch the itch. There's something more to it, and there is. And that's why we've done all this work to point people to this fact that, you know, you have to overcome your human nature. You have to overcome your physical nature and enter into your godlike nature. And that's a real process. It's a lifelong process. And that's what we're trying to help people come to grips with, and why these film series are so important to get people's attention to see that there's more to it than just, you know, living your life and eating and drinking and carrying on with pleasure. There's more to it. There's a process that we have to enter into to be prepared for what I call the great transportation. And this proliferation of UFOs doesn't surprise me, because I think it's kind of like a gathering preparing for the moment when there's going to be this call for us to leave. And I believe it's true. I think the New Testament teaches this, the Vatican coming out and saying, well, extraterrestrial life, you know, they don't understand the whole issue of the messenger angels. They don't get that. Angelology is not part of a real mainline doctrine of Christendom, and they're missing it because it's very important. God, you know, you know, sometimes when you look at little drawings from kids, you know, how they have the hands coming out of the head and the legs coming out of the head. Mm-hmm, you know, that's how infantile our understanding of God is. You know, we don't have a full picture of who he is, but he sends representations and emissaries and proxies for himself to do his bidding. He doesn't just do everything, you know, from his own personhood. He has myriads of messengers and helpers and angels, and they come in ships. And the great departure, the great transportation, we have to get ready for this thing, and people aren't ready. I mean, we're barely out of the dark ages of spiritual knowledge, and we don't have a clue. But we have to learn about this inner self, which is antimatter, encased in matter, which is a mystery in itself, because they don't destroy each other. But the balance is so delicate, it's unbelievable. And that's why, you know, when people come into the presence of antimatter, like ghosts or angels or things
right,
like that,
right.
They freak out because it's antimatter and their bodies can't handle that. But we have to grow on the inside if we expect to be transported. That's why this film, Gateway to the Galaxy, it's the best thing I've ever done. It's so important. And I hope people get it or get the trilogy, because it'll change your life. It'll change your life.
When did you begin to change your life? During the 3 years or before that?
Well, you know, I've been on this journey for a long time, you know, but I think in the last 5 years, I've like, instead of crawling, I started running. And I've made amazing progress in my spiritual growth over the last 5 years as I've entered into some lost knowledge. You know, we have on our website free 40 pages of a lost translation of the book of the first page of Genesis. It's unbelievable. If people think that they know about creation that are steeped in Christian theology, they don't know nothing. And go to my site, download it, read it. You'll see what I'm talking about. It's been lost, but it's been found. We have it. So, I've been on this path for a long time, but I would say in the last 5 years I've accelerated, and especially since I've entered into the research on the Great Pyramid. I had it totally backwards for a long time, but it truly is you know, Isaiah writes about it. I will build a monument in the land of Syria, which was Cairo, and it will be a monument unto the Lord of hosts, or the Lord of gods, hosts being angels. So this thing was built for the benefit of the whole world. It's the only tangible prophecy. You can actually touch it. A lot of people go to Egypt, they don't even know what they're looking at. But if you're going to go to Egypt, you better get my films, because you won't have a clue what you're looking at, because it's been lost. But we're uncovering it, and that's what these films are all about. So I know as people look at them, there's a transformation will start happening. Your mind circuits will open up, and you'll expand your thinking, and you'll grow.
Next hour, I want to really get into Gateway to the Galaxy. But you were saying earlier of some comparison between Enoch and Toph. What did you mean by that?
Well, that's probably what we'll get into. In the book, in the next hour, we should go there, because Toph is a very much maligned by the Western world, in that people like Anton LaVey and Madame Blavatsky have twisted the meaning of Toph and given him really a bad rap, and put him in a way that is really not in the proper light. So in dealing with this character in the Egyptian mythologies, we prove some things. For example, when you think about Enoch, we were talking about how difficult it is to wrap your mind around a guy that left Earth without dying, just took probably in a ship, like I'm saying. That's hard to contemplate. But the West Garden of Eden was incorporated the land of Egypt, and when the original progenitors of the human race were kicked out, they had to go to the West Garden, and that's where the cradle of development of civilization took place, which incorporated Egypt. So Egypt was a land where Enoch was, and so you would think that if he was such a great man and he was so prolific in knowledge, because the Great Pyramid incorporates so many mathematical, geometrical equations, and where it was built, the center of the world's landmass, it was perfectly leveled. You know how hard it is to perfectly level 14 acres when the earth is curved? Because, the masons knew.
It's not easy, and you don't have any heavy equipment, or at least you're not supposed to?
Well, no, if you laid out a foundation on a curved earth, that means as you built up, it would begin to separate. So they had to figure in the fact that the earth was curved to make sure that the pyramid was built in a way that maintained the integrity of the joints. The masons have always known this, and they've always calculated into skyscrapers and things like that, but that knowledge wasn't known to the world for thousands of years. The ancient Egyptians, when they leveled the Great Pyramid, they knew that because the earth was curved, they had to make adjustments to make it totally level. And so things like that, they figured out how to square the circle. They understood pi and phi. It was a perfect compass. I mean, there's so many things. You know that the Great Pyramid is actually curved at its base at the same ratio as the circumference of the earth. These people knew the earth was round back then 5,000 years ago. Well, how did they know these things? Well, it was supernaturally given. And there's one last thing I'll tell you about later in the show about what Enoch knew in relationship to the precession of the equinox that couldn't have been known by any human. He had to have it given to him supernaturally. So the issue of Enoch is important because of the fact that he escaped death. But you would think that a guy of this capacity, with this brilliance, would have left some kind of footprint or fingerprint or some remnant of his presence on the earth in the Egyptian culture. And nobody's cracked that. But we've cracked this on this last trip in Gateway to the Galaxy, and we'll talk about that, I'm hopeful, in the next hour.
Now, and when he was taken, I mean, do you think, you said he was 300-plus years old at that time. Do you think he's still alive?
Yeah, because he's coming with 10,000 saints. He's coming again. He's coming back again under the lordship of the Father to collect the remnants of the earth that are prepared in ships. That's what I believe. People think when Jesus ascended on the Mount Olivet that he just flew into space. He actually went into what was called a cloud, but the cloud is not the word we would think of as clouds. It was probably a ship. He also left in a ship, which is going to tick off a lot of Christian people, but go study the word cloud in the Gospels. It's simply not the word for cloud in the Greek. So yes, Enoch left, and he went in. A lot of people say, well, he went to be with Jesus. No, I don't believe that. He went into the star area of Arcturus, and there's three places mentioned in the book of Job: Arcturus, the Pleiades, and the Belt of Orion, that had specific references to the angel groupings of the seraphim, the cherubim, and the Ophanim. And the Ophanim lords are from the Arcturus. So Enoch was an Ophanim that escaped death because he transcended to such a degree that he could handle antimatter, and he left, and they took him. And he's coming back because he populated a whole godly race, that are way beyond us. So that's that's who's coming back, and he's leading. And that's like his the family that he populated. Now that's going to really tick off a lot of Christian people. But go read your Bible.
We'll also open up the phone lines to give people an opportunity to talk with you. You know, one of the I think very important things of this program, Ken, it's not whether people agree with you or not. It's that you're given a right to talk about your specific views, and if they want to call and challenge you, so be it. I'm your facilitator. You know, I'm a believer in some other things too, but it's not my job to jump up and down all over you while you're giving your presentation. But we'll let the phone callers do that.
All right. Well, I want to get in this Toth Enoch thing in the next hour because it really is all about this the Gateway to the Galaxy film that we just finished.
Now, when you put together Gateway to the Galaxy, how did you get the information for this? Was this research, work? How did it come to you?
A lot of it was research, you know, but when I was filming the work for Message from the Stars, which was the second film that followed The Lost Legend of Enoch, first film, I knew it was going to be two films because I couldn't say it all in 1 hour. I knew I was going to have to break this up into two films. So I knew a lot of this before I started filming it from research and studies that I had undertaken. And so when we got to Egypt this last time, I put together the film footage for the five segments on factoring in where the pyramid was built in time, because it's really, you know, there's 3,000 years of Egyptian history. You can look at any artifact there, and you don't know where it fits in time. And the greatest artifact is the Great Pyramid. So, understanding the truth about it, you have to have it placed in time somewhere. And I think we effectively did that as we go through five arguments that position the Great Pyramid around 3100 BC, which was 600 years before Khufu. And that kind of destroys, if you follow the logic and follow the evidence of what we're saying, you'll see that the traditional Egyptian explanation for the Great Pyramid is totally wrong. But, you know, we do a lot of things that explain why, you know, this was supernatural knowledge. It couldn't have been ascertained or accumulated by some pharaoh that there's a 2-inch statue of it. There's just no proof of it. So, you know, the whole treatment of the trilogy deals with the ridiculous argument, you know, that the History Channel continues to perpetuate with their silly, explanations for how it was built and all of that. And that's part of the problem is people eat that up because, you know, people want to know about the Great Pyramid. There's an itch inside of us that is not scratched by the traditional view. There's something mysterious about it, mystical. And our films get to the point. We get right to the point, and we do it through, you know, travels throughout Egypt. We do it by, you know, explaining the facts of the pyramid and historical proofs, and even into the mythologies, which we get into in the third film, Gateway to the Galaxy. So, you know, it's an incredible piece of work. I think it's gonna change the world myself.
All right, we're gonna get into it in a big way next hour. Gateway to the Galaxy. It's the third part of Ken Klein's trilogy, and his websites are linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Final hour, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll spend the entire hour, next hour, talking with him about these theories. I'll be back.